You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Carey Moyer. Carey, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Delighted to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Carey, we're talking to you in Brooklyn. You're in your studio. It's the 16th of September in 2020. We're still in the middle of the pandemic. Before we talk about all of your work, how is it working in this rather bizarre context in Brooklyn?
I mean, on the one hand, I think a lot of artists are saying it's not that different than their normal routine because we're mostly alone unless we have assistants in the studio. So, but on the other hand, it's just such a dark time in general, just politically and, you know, between the wildfires, the COVID, the Black Lives Matter, the institutional meltdown, the election. It's hanging over everyone's head for sure.
It sure is. So let's talk about what you're working on now. You've been in a lot of great shows. You were in the Whitney Biennial just a few years ago, which must have been pretty thrilling. Tell me what you're working on now. What's happening in your studio?
Well, I'm in the middle of working on a monograph that will be published by Rizzoli, which will come out in fall 2021. So we're just gathering all the material right now, which is going to be amazing. It'll have about 100 color plates of paintings in it. I'm also getting ready for a show, which I'll have at DC Moore in February. Under whatever conditions we're having exhibitions at this point. And then I'm also, my partner, my wife, Sheila Pepe, and I did a collaborative show at the Portland Museum of Art this spring called Tabernacles for Trying Times, and that's going to be reinstalled at MAD, the Museum of Art and Design in New York, starting in May 2021. So we're going to be doing some new pieces for that. So we actually have a lot going on. I have a lot going on in the studio. It's just a very surreal moment to be making art and, sort of wondering how art's going to function moving forward.
Well, yeah, so maybe we could talk about both things, the monograph, but also what you're doing with your partner, Sheila Pepe. Tell me a little bit about what you guys are doing together.
Last year we worked on a collaborative show called Tabernacles for Trying Times, and it's not really an overview. We'd started making work together just sort of as a side project in 2011. And the curator at the Portland Museum, Jamie D. Simone, invited us to show that work along with solo works of our own and then create a new collaborative piece for the show. And we decided that both of us being not religious at all, we're thinking of what is a sort of gathering place where we can be together as community, and thought of a museum in that sense, and sort of made something we call Parlor for the People, which was a space designed by us with furniture and all sorts of, literally like a tent over the top as a gathering space to do different programming in around social justice. So that is moving to MAD in New York, and hopefully some of the restrictions will be lifted by the time, at least May or once.
MAD is the Museum of Art and Design, correct?
Yeah, in Manhattan. And our our dream and our fingers crossed that the show is going to be up there for a year. So by the at some point in the show, we will be able to once again use this space as a sort of gathering spot for programming.
Wow, so the show's going to be up for a year. That's a long time. To talk a little bit more about that show, what will happen during that year with visitors? Is there interactive elements that that will kind of stand in the place of some of the programming you might have done? Is it purely visual, or is there interactive elements?
There's Sheila will have a piece she calls Common Sense, in which visitors unravel a work of hers by knitting their own or knitting or crocheting their own pieces, which they take away. And then we're either going to have stuff on Zoom. I mean, the museum will be open, so people there, and there will be paintings and sculpture, and many of the things that people know us for individually. We'll also have a lot of archival material around sort of politics and, you know, how feminism and our own engagement with the art world, sort of historical stuff that we've worked on for the last 25 years. So there's going to be a lot of different elements to this. But, yeah, I think, you know, what happened when the show was in Portland is we had 1 month where the show was actually open before the lockdown. And then we had a really robust online programming around the exhibition using the same talent, if you were, collaborators and doing stuff online. So
there is some
hopefully
programming
it won't come
online that will be happening as well.
Well, we don't know exactly because, you know, the show will open in 9 months and we don't know where it's going to be at in terms of, you know, public access to group spaces and whatnot.
Right. And tell me a little bit about the monograph. Yeah, I think that's a good way to talk about current, past, and all your work, because a monograph, especially one of that size, I would imagine it's sort of like having a retrospective, right? You're looking over your whole career and trying to put it together in some kind of sensible way. So how is that? Are you seeing something different from looking at that much of your work in this process? It's a very unusual process.
It's pretty. Yeah, it's, well, it won't be my entire career. It'll start around 2006, so it'll be for about 15 years of work. I, for some reason, I feel like I want to save the big epic book for the future, hopefully, knock wood. But it's been really interesting. You know, I don't know when you have other artists on the show, but often when I make things in the studio, I'm like, that doesn't even look like my own work. And to see this sort of interesting continuity and unfolding of different themes has been really interesting, because I'm having to look really closely at paintings and pick out which ones will be in it and which will be left behind, which will get details. So it sort of starts with a moment that I think of as a kind of breakthrough in the work, in which I'm kind of thinking about both abstraction and a kind of feminist iconography, and how those two aspects might work together and become legible to the viewer.
So let's talk about just that. The iconography of abstract painting and those other issues of feminism. How does that come together? I know that's kind of maybe a difficult thing to talk about, but can you tell me a little bit about how you're seeing so far how those two things do come together? We're talking about content and form coming together somehow, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that I At one point, and this is somewhat present in the work still, is I was thinking about how one could connote the figural without actually painting a body. So I was looking at things like, ancient vases, tribal, instruments, things that evoke the kind of symmetry or also a use value, in terms of how they would relate to the body, say a picture or something. And then sort of combining that with things that we think of as a certain moment in, very late modernism, like color field painting, which was sort of presented at the time as if it had no content. it was this kind of neutral position of this is about color, this is about color saturating the surface. But seen in a different light, it could also be thought of as a reference to the body or to blood or to different kinds of fluid. So in a way that seems more contemporary in terms of reading formal issues, started to bring some of that into the paintings as well.
And, so can and you give in me an example way, of that, like a visual example of that? What does that mean in terms of the iconography itself? There'll be images with this interview, so you could be pulling from a particular image if you want, but what's an example of how that would come together?
I'm trying to think of an early version. Well, there's one painting that is on my website that I think of as a kind of... it's called The Crux, and it looks both like a hand shape, and also it has this sort of vaginal shape in the center. So it uses a kind of symmetry that recognizes ritualistic work from Christianity to anything else. In other words, it's not a landscape in which the eye is invited to move off the frame and imagine what's on either side. One is sort of commanded to look in the middle, but within that space, it's sort of veiled with very transparent, flowing color that refers to the way someone like Frankenthaler started using paint in the 50s. Mm. In other words, sort of staining the canvas. Mm. So it's combining two aspects of, inviting a person to see the formal way the paint is used in a different light than it was typically used art historically.
Well,
do you get what I'm saying?
I do. In terms of... especially when thinking of somebody like Frankenthaler, it's such a kind of curious next step for painting that was so involved with form, right, to now have a type of content in there. It seems almost at once it's hard to balance those two things, right, that things are either figurative or they're not figurative. There's recognizable shapes or not, but in this case, you're talking about something that has a narrative to it, really, right? That the work you're making, the one that you just mentioned, has a narrative, a message.
Yeah, there's definitely, I think that's one of the things that's true of most of my work. I think of myself as an abstract painter, but often there's imagery in it that might seem recognizable to the viewer, and I welcome that. I think that culturally, or I don't know if culturally is the right word, but I think we're at a point in painting where things like figuration and abstraction, I'm not sure how those terms actually work anymore. But definitely the use of certain formal elements that recall, I guess what I'm hoping for is that a person will use sort of intuitive readings that they're pre-primed to think about, such as, I mean, for anyone who grew up in as a Christian, the sort of symmetry implied in a cross. You know, I mean, there are all these places where symmetry is used to tell us something. So that's one thing that I'm playing with, and maybe inventing. And one of the arguments around feminism, second wave feminism, and the feminist art movement was thinking about how, what do we do with this sort of patriarchal past? How do we either use the material or insert ourselves into it? Or, you know, and I think plenty of artists since the 70s have been doing that. But painting is always a stickler because it's one of the things that has this very robust past that we use as the sort of through line for art history. Whereas video, there were tons of women artists who were innovators in video, but since that only started in the 60s, there's not much sort of history or baggage that comes with that. So I guess the question for me for a long time has been, how do I use art historical moves that have very specific meanings attached to them, mm-hmm. and sort of, you know, come up with something else or something in addition or a way of rethinking how they are interpreted.
Mm-hmm. I like that. It's great talking to you. I want to ask you one more question, which is, what are you reading at the moment? I'm always curious what everyone's reading.
Oh, I'm reading tons of things. I always read a lot at the same time. But I'm reading this book by Robert Gluck, who's a San Francisco writer called Marjorie Kemp. And basically Marjorie Kemp, I guess, they think of as the first person to write an autobiography, which was like in the 1400s. This is actually a real book, but he re-envisioned it. And she was a kind of, she believed that she had a relationship with Jesus. And so that is what her book is about. So it's this kind of ecstatic, very carnal look at this woman who in the late Middle Ages dares to write about her own experience. And Bob Gluck is a sort of experimental writer from the Bay Area who's re-envisioned this story. And it's fabulous.
That sounds very exciting and really unusual. Carrie, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure talking with you.
Oh, it's great to talk to you. Thank you for inviting me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.